Big show for you here today. Post NFL draft fantasy offensive power rankings. We go 32-1 in five tiers and talk about the teams that we have the most questions about and the teams we are investing in this year from an offensive fantasy ecosystem. Yes, that's right. Ecosystem, baby. Get the drinks rolling. What teams are we invested in? Which teams are we most skeptical of? Where in Scott's rankings do I have the biggest questions, the biggest disagreements? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball every day. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, but it is especially a hell of a day to talk ball when we can get our man on this show. He is the one, the only, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. NFL draft is done. I've been living in the baseball streets, but definitely dipping my toe into football and looking forward to cutting it up with you.
And we are cutting it up, Scott, on one of our favorite topics to talk about, one of your kind of your staples here at Yahoo. That is the fantasy power rankings, fantasy offense power rankings, the ecosystem. We can go ahead and get the first drink in there. The ecosystem power rankings, what post-draft offensive power rankings. That is what we are breaking down here, Scott. You're not like your buddy Frank Schwab, who's got to deal with the actual power rankings. Our buddy, our good friend, Frank Schwab. You get to do a little kind of subsection of this here. So I'm very excited. I love talking about these with you every single year.
Yeah, appreciate that. Me too. And also, I will be including a fantasy nugget when Frank does get around to those power rankings. So look forward to that. Frank's one of my OG buddies in this industry, as you are. And so let's get into it, man. We got a lot to figure out.
We have a lot to figure out. We're going to go 32-1 here. And of course, it wouldn't be a Yahoo Fantasy Forecast if we weren't putting these teams into tiers. So that is what we're going to do here. We've got five tiers that shout out to producer Colin, who had a tough show earlier this week. Colin got, Boone just destroyed him, Scott. I mean, he just destroyed him for his team in the mock draft we did. So I'm going to give Colin some love here. And say that he did a good job putting these tiers together, right? He essentially put the teams into tiers, I believe. So let's start here with tier five. These are our rebuild in progress / only diamonds in the rough for fantasy. Starting with number 32, the Tennessee Titans. Number 31, the New York Jets. 30, Pittsburgh Steelers. Number 29, the Cleveland Browns. And 28, Las Vegas Raiders. So Scott, I throw those five teams out at you. Take it anywhere. Which one of these teams do you think could actually break through and, like, do you have some level of confidence in?
Yeah, I'm glad you phrased it that way because I have the Titans at 32, but I can't wait till I get to move them up. I want to keep my feet on the ground when I say this. I saw a little bit of the Drake May rookie season in Cam Ward's rookie season. What I mean by that, it doesn't mean the Titans are going to the Super Bowl and Cam Ward's going to be an MVP candidate this year. But what I mean is that Cam Ward had no help last year and he acquitted himself well and was actually a reasonably productive player in the second half of the year. And what have they done? They've drafted help. They've improved their offense. They've obviously broomed out the whole coaching staff. Hopefully that's going to be a help. You never really know with that. But I think I saw enough from Cam Ward last year to say that he's definitely can play. He just needs to have some assistance. So at least they can check, theoretically, that quarterback box because so many teams in this bucket can't. Geno Smith is hopefully good enough just to keep Garrett Wilson afloat, but he's obviously on his last legs. Aaron Rodgers is the bad idea, I guess, that the Steelers have left. But I'm not excited about him. The Browns, their quarterback room is just a joke. And I think that's going to fall apart, even though they have a ton of skill talent. So I don't think the Titans are going to be the worst. No, maybe this is just a cheap win here, because to say something isn't the worst, that means you're just going to beat one other team. But I feel like the Titans could be quasi-useful for fantasy this year. And I'm looking forward to seeing Cam Ward taking a step forward.
I feel like it comes down to just how good can Carnell Tate be right off the rip. Because Cam Ward, if you look at it, out of 30 qualifying quarterbacks, so I think it's like 250 plus plays last year, if we want to say that's the qualifier, 300 plays last year. There are 30 quarterbacks had him, and he was dead last.
I know.
Number 30 out of 30.
That's everything.
EPA per play and success rate. Yeah, he was last in everything. But I think there is still a credible argument to be made that he was better than the stats. Because I mean, Drake May actually did have, you know, you had to do some splitting, you had to do some kind of digging, but you could find some positive indicators from like a success rate standpoint, passing success rate standpoint with Drake May. There's really no way to splice it other than if you just look at that one game against the Seattle Seahawks, where weirdly Cam Ward is probably one of the best quarterbacks statistically against the Seahawks' ferocious defense, maybe a trap game type thing for the Seahawks in that one. But other than that, like, there's no real promising stat. But I think you can watch him and say, hey, there's something to him here. I think he showed he had moments, and he just wasn't surrounded by credible threats. Carnell Tate, you know, whether he's a normal fourth overall pick, Scott, he's still a guy that I think can hit the ground running and be a starting NFL receiver right off the jump because he's so polished and his hands are so good and everything. So I think that is a big factor here. In addition to the offensive line playing better than it did last year, despite some of the investments.
So let's flip it the other way, okay? There we're giving the quarterback the benefit of the doubt. We'll see how good his skill talent is. The Browns had a great draft last year with their rookie skill talent. Mm-hmm. Fannin was really good. Judkins, you know, did things. Sampson is a player of some talent. And then they've attacked the skill positions again in the draft this year, but they have such a bad quarterback room. Does that push you off Fannin? Does that push you off some of their receivers? Does it push you off the backfield? How are you handling the Browns? I have them at 29th, and certainly in this bottom bucket, but I'm just afraid that they don't have much of an upside because I can't tell myself a story where any of these quarterbacks are any good. I just think too much has happened to Watson. Obviously, he brought a lot of it on himself, yeah. But he's a physically compromised player now. I'd be shocked if he's ever a good NFL player again. Sanders was mostly a miss as a rookie last year, but you know, some people did like him in the draft the previous season. I phrase it again, you know, Fannin's a really good player. A lot of talent in that wide receiver room. You know, how are you addressing their skill guys when we can't trust the quarterbacks?
Yeah, they're nothing. The receivers, at least. And I love Casey Concepcion. That was my guy in this year's draft. But even he's like a late round kind of dart throw, essentially. And you just kind of have to see what happens. I really like him as an option to Todd Monken's offense. I think he's going to be deployed really well, but that's like it's going to be fun to watch that on film. It's not going to be fun to watch the fantasy stats in terms of KC Concepcion. Unless I think the path here, Scott, is that, and obviously we're talking about a fifth round pick versus the first overall pick, but it would be the same thing that we just said about Cam Ward. Like if you dock the plays down, and you get 37 qualifying quarterbacks to include Shedeur Sanders in there, he's going to be dead last in success rate and EPA per play and all of those efficiency metrics. Again, similar with Ward, I think he played a little bit better than those stats, and he was completely thwarted by a horrible wide receiver room last year with Shedeur Sanders. Jerry Jeudy included was a big problem in that room. So could Shedeur Sanders be a functional, again, just functional quarterback now that we've got Denzel Boston and KC Concepcion in here, and maybe a better version of Jerry Jeudy if he's playing off ball? I mean, I wouldn't say it's a strong possibility, but I also wouldn't say it's a 0% possibility. So I do think Harold Fannin's a guy, I don't know about you, but I've docked in my rankings post-draft. He went in the 10th round in our staff mock draft, which is, that's like more than enough for me to, okay, now I'm totally fine taking him in that range, but I don't know that he's going to go that late in every draft. But it's just a much more crowded situation than you probably would want for a team that doesn't have solidified quarterback play.
Yeah, you said 0%. Those are the chances that I will draft Jerry Jeudy this year. Recently put in my rankings for the Fantasy Football Index, and I guess I was the low man out of 20 on Fannin, but that's, again, a comment on the quarterbacks there. Also, by the way, just when we were doing the mock draft for the Index this week, every time I saw the receiver board, I'm like, oh, this is kind of when Metcalf makes sense. This is kind of when who's the other receiver they got from the Colts?
Pittman.
This is kind of when Pittman makes sense. I can't sign up for another year of Aaron Rodgers, or God forbid, the guys who were worse than Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers plays at a slow pace. He's in his 40s now. I realize he's a walk-in Hall of Famer. It would take an act of Congress for him to have a 300-yard passing game. You're just never going to have, even in this format where it's best ball, it's, you know, you just can't get a spike week, right? Oh, Rodgers played pretty well today. He threw for 240 yards or something like that. I could not be more out on that Pittsburgh passing game. And even if I'm saying I'm just looking for a best ball filler, I'm just looking for somebody to be my wide receiver four, I'm still saying no to those guys. What say you?
Scotty making Congress jokes here in the year 2026. So we won't pull on that thread anymore. But yeah, let's pull on the Steelers thread here for a second. I will just say, if I was to do this exercise, which this is your baby, this is not my lane here, I think I probably would have had Pittsburgh at 32nd. And it's just like, I'm not totally sure Rodgers is going to be their quarterback this year at this point anymore. I mean, it's freaking May 6th, and they put that weird UFA tag on him, you know, to essentially guarantee themselves a comp pick just in case, like, Bo Nix's ankle acts up. And, you know, Mike Florio had this report that, like, maybe him and Sean Payton have been talking or whatever. And plus, like, Rodgers might just decide he's not playing this year. And then I guess they're stuck with, you know, Drew Aller and Will Howard and Mason Rudolph, which doesn't give me a lot of confidence either. So, I certainly feel like while I can appreciate the offensive depth chart for this team that we're looking at here, I think the offensive line is good. I think the receiver room is pretty well put together. I just don't think I'm going to be drafting around this team a lot this year.
Yeah, I guess maybe I gave more respect to Dowdle and Warren than some other people did. I think they're both playable.
Sure.
Lower end twos or higher end running back threes. So that carried some weight to me. We also know this team will throw to 27 tight ends and none of them will have fantasy value.
Yeah, that is probably true. But I think I'm more interested in like Jets skill position players, which is a crazy thing to say, than Steelers skill position players this year. And obviously they're the top team in this tier, but certainly like the Raiders, I'm drafting Genty. I'm drafting Bowers. I don't mind taking super late shots at their receiver room. So, yeah, Steelers-wise, I think they're the team I would have had at 32nd. But I think we got a good grasp of where we're at in terms of just this bottom tier. So we know those are the teams that are most likely to be, you know, some of the least inspiring offensive ecosystems. Let's go up a tier here to tier number four. These are potential value offenses for fantasy, but be careful of the ones trending in the wrong way. High risk, high reward, essentially, is this tier. Number 27, we have the New Orleans Saints. Number 26, the Miami Dolphins. Number 25, Washington Commanders. Number 24, Carolina Panthers. 23, Houston Texans. 22, Arizona Cardinals. 21, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Essentially, the non-Atlanta Falcons, NFC South contingent here. That's what we've got. By the way, the Falcons you have really high in this exercise. We're definitely coming back to that one a little bit later. But Scott, there's a few like Matt Harmon pet favorite offenses from this offseason here in this list. Saints, Commanders.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Those are the two I think that stand. Yeah, those are the two that stand out to me as like maybe they could jump a tier if everything breaks right.
Yeah, obviously with the Commanders, it's Jaden Daniels. How healthy is he? Is Terry McLaurin going to have a bounce back season? Can McCaffrey or Williams ascend to a reliable second target in that passing game? Do we get a playable running back? It's going to be a competition there, but does somebody have plausible, projectable volume every week? The Saints are a fun team. I mean, they got Kellen Moore right, plays at a fast pace. He's an intelligent play designer, and Tyler Shuck was more NFL ready than he should have been. I mean, he was in college longer than the Animal House guys, but you know, Tyler Shuck was pretty good down the stretch. He was a top 10 quarterback for fantasy purposes down like the last 2 months or so. And giving them a healthy Chris Olave, they obviously invested in the draft, get another receiver piece. We'll see what ETN has ready. I don't think there's anything left with Alvin Kamara, but Juwan Johnson isn't a bad second tight end to draft. I think the Saints could be a fun team. I don't even dislike their defense. I think they could win that division. I mean, it's whatever, damning with faint praise because that division is so bad. Last year, Carolina won it at 8-9. And the Panthers, you know, I know I'm going to be in on Chuba Hubbard, just a classic ordinary talent, but he's their guy. I don't see Brooks as much of a threat as some other people do. And if you want to get everybody to say good pick, pick Brooks this year. You know, people are kind of, he's come a little bit of a trendy helium guy. I'm telling you the inconvenient truth. It's going to be Chuba Hubbard who's going to 3.9 his way per carry to fantasy relevance. He'll catch 45 passes. And at least McMillan was the real deal last year. I still like Canales. I don't love Canales, but I think he was a good hire. Bryce Young maybe can be a league average quarterback. So, the Panthers, at least all we're asking from these teams is, can you support your best player? And can you maybe give us a couple other guys we're thinking about playing every week? And most of these teams check that box. Now, the wild card in this whole group is the Cardinals, because McBride can be a dominant player at tight end. What's going on at receiver? Marvin Harrison, why hasn't he become a star yet? And for all the excuses we wanted to give to Harrison, well, how come Michael Wilson seems to be doing just fine every time he gets a chance to play? Wilson and Harrison are going to be drafted right on top of each other. They're the dog whistle players that when one guy gets picked, it's the signal to draft the other one. When you're coming down to needing a receiver, it's one of those Arizona guys. Do you lean towards one of them? Are you avoiding both of them? Are you open to both of them? What's your stance in Arizona?
It's so funny. I said the exact same thing on our mock draft show and in my write-up, that as soon as one Arizona Cardinals receiver goes off the board, that's your signal to take the next one. So we're on the same page with that one. When it comes to rankings, I'll probably do the hedge ranking, which is what I'm currently doing with the Bears receivers as well, where I'm just going to have those guys right next to each other. So they're the earlier round version of that. It's like, okay, someone takes Burton.
This is the poor man Bears. Yeah, gotcha.
This is the poor man's version of that. Hey, you know what? Good tight end. You know, potentially interesting running game. Just different quarterback play. Okay, the different quarterback play. There is that there for these two
offenses. Coaching
could
be a difference too.
I like LaFleur, but obviously I don't think he's going to be Ben Johnson right off the rip here. That's for sure. I think when I'm talking about these two receivers here, I still generally am a fan of Harrison, although I will admit he's been disappointing in the NFL relative to really, really high expectations. You're kind of moving those goalposts. You're kind of adjusting those expectations now at this point. Like, do I think he's going to be as good as like what I thought he'd be coming into the league? I don't know about that, but I don't think he's been as bad as the stats have shown in isolation. I think he just wasn't a fit with Kyler Murray and then got injured in the back half of last year when Jacoby Brissett was the quarterback. I do think, though, if we're thinking about how these receivers are going to be deployed in a Mike LaFleur offense, I think Michael Wilson's probably the guy that can play off ball a little bit more and run some of those like big in cut routes, which does just kind of fit with what they want from the primary receiver. So I would probably hedge ranking wise put Michael Wilson before Marvin Harrison, but I do think they should go off the board, like I said, right back to back.
So the other day I do this really fun podcast with John Hansen and Brian Drake over at Fantasy Points, and they asked me about Marvin Harrison, and my ultimate takeaway was, I think I need to see it. I'm probably out on Harrison. And then I do a draft that night, and I had the opportunity to get Harrison as my wide receiver 5. And I'm like, I can't say no to that. So you're not living until you contradict yourself. And also these rankings, Matt, we do rankings and we do shows and we say things. But to really test how you feel, you have to put it out into the wild and draft and 100%. Put a stake on something, get attached to something. That's how you really learn how you feel. So, I could stay up all night and watch YouTube videos on golf, but it doesn't really matter until I get on the course and I have to hit the shot I've been trying to execute. Everything's easy at 1:30 in the morning, or on a show, but you have to test yourself and see how you actually feel.
Well, I know I can't. It doesn't matter if it's 1 in the morning or on the golf course. I can't hit a golf ball to save my life. So we'll let you take the lead on that one. But it's funny when we're looking at the fantasy offense rankings, like, I think I'd probably bet that the Saints at 27 are a better overall offense than the Cardinals at 22. That being said, it comes back to the where you're taking these guys and everything. And I'm really high on Olave. I'm really high on Jordan Tyson landing with the Saints. I think it's a good fit for him. 72% completion rate for Tyler Shuck on out routes and flat routes last year, according to Fantasy Points data. And those are two of Jordan Tyson's best routes, like those deeper and short out cuts, whereas Chris Olave and Shuck had a great chemistry on the inbreakers. So it's an offense that I want to invest in. I just think there's less big names than you would find in Arizona. But speaking of big names, I actually want to talk about the Bucs at 21. Feels kind of low for the Bucs. I don't have a strong take on this team whatsoever. So talk to me just kind of about your thoughts on Tampa Bay and where you're at with some of their players.
A transition year, right? Mike Evans is finally gone. Not that that's a good thing, walking Hall of Famer, but He's out the building. They're going to need some of their younger receivers to step up. Baker last year, he was over his skis 2 years ago. Last year, he, after a really good start, he played very poorly for 3 months, but he had a laundry list of injuries. So, and we've been all over the place with Baker Mayfield. He was a number one pick. He got the Browns to the playoffs, which is a miracle in the 2000s. And then he, you know, that went south to the point that they, you know, they ended up doing all the Deshaun Watson stuff. They basically pushed Baker out of town, all that stuff. He goes to Tampa Bay, has this comeback. And then last year he was hurt the whole season and the offense couldn't get going. When you hash it all out, I think he's an average to slightly above average quarterback. He's basically the band that Stillwater was in Almost Famous. You know, it's a think piece about a mid-level band struggling with their heart, you know, the limitations that they have in the harsh face of stardom. That's basically Baker Mayfield. And he's going to throw some touchdowns. He's going to throw some to the other guys. They're going to be in the playoff hunt in the final week, probably lose. If they do make the playoffs, they're going to get swamped in week one. But I think Mike Evans, and I realize he only played, what, 7 games or something like that last year. I think he, even when he was just on the field, I think he commanded a lot of stuff and made a lot of things easier for other people. I think they're going to miss Mike Evans more than is commonly thought. And as much as I did, you know, Ibuka, you know, really fast start to his rookie year. And then as Mayfield got hurt,
yeah, I was going
to
ask,
and the room got more crowded, Ibuka's production really went down. I think people are willing to take a step up for him in drafts, maybe a little bit more proactively than I am.
Now, I was going to ask you, like, do you have a strong opinion on Ibuka? Because, you know, I just got done with his year two charting for reception perception. And obviously his rookie season, he's going to be dropped at the year two players. I do think he really, I thought he was awesome to start the year. Obviously, from a statistical perspective, that was clear. I do think he waned as the year went on and just didn't look the same after the hamstring injury. So in a similar case to a guy like Odunze, who I thought was awesome to start the year. I mean, they're so similar the way those two guys' seasons went. And I think I'm willing to give Odunze a pass because of the injury after talking to him about that injury specifically, I probably should be willing to do the same for Ibuka. Also, a guy like Brian Thomas Jr. played through injuries last year too. So I do kind of want to wipe the slate clean for a lot of guys like this. The thing that does have me a little nervous about Ibuka though, coming into the NFL, I thought he was like a big slot receiver. You know, that was what he was at Ohio State. Last year he had to play so much on the outside and kind of be that X receiver when Mike Evans was out. And obviously Mike Evans is gone now. Chris Godwin needs to be in the slot. Jalen McMillan's a guy that you want to be like kind of a slot Z. Does that essentially leave Ibuka running those vertical routes against press man coverage? I don't really think that's the strength of his game. So that's not enough for me to say like, oh, Ibuka's overvalued or somebody I'm not drafting in fantasy. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I think that could kind of dampen his ceiling case and actually kind of lift up a guy like Chris Godwin, who there's a massive gap in their ADPs. And I get it. Ibuka's the guy, the young guy on the rise and is a good player. I think there's no question about that. But it could lead to a guy like Chris Godwin being pretty undervalued, in my opinion.
Another thing that hurt their ranking for me, even though these guys are all talented, Bucky Irving's still here. They bring in Gainwell, who's an excellent pass catcher. And Sean Tucker has got to be one of the best running back threes on any team. He's a decent player who's going to get some run. So there's going to be a chance of these guys kind of all bumping into each other a little bit. And it's hard. I did take Bucky Irving in the mock draft that we did, but it was a little bit of a, well, he's here. I'll take him. The value makes sense. But
I gave you props for that. I thought there was a chance he could be a steal, honestly, at running back 19.
I appreciated that. And tell me before we go to break really quick, tell me the Chiefs hasn't gone bad on Terry McLaurin. I realized last year he signs late. You always get worried about that. And then Daniels, you know, he just had a lost season with injury. Everything went wrong for Washington last year after everything going right the previous year. We know it's an old team. We know McLaurin is 30 himself. What's the state of the Terry McLaurin? Does we talk all OSU receivers all the time, which we usually do anyway. What's the state of the McLaurin address?
Right. We're talking a lot of Ohio State receivers here. No, I still think Terry is in good position here. And I'm kind of excited, and I've said this a lot over the course of the offseason, that I'm excited to see what David Blau does here from an offensive standpoint. I think he's going to move Terry around more. Now, Terry's going to still, for the most part, be the vertical X receiver, but I think he'll get more favorable opportunities than what he got in Cliff Kingsbury's offense when he was essentially just the static outside receiver. So I think Terry's actually a pretty decent value pick this year. The real key for them, which is the same for Houston too, which is in this tier, is can they get a second receiver to emerge? Obviously, Washington has a rookie in Antonio Williams that I'm excited about, and I kind of like Jaden Higgins a little bit. I'm a big fan of Jalen Knoll as well in complementary roles. So that's really the key for a lot of guys in this, a lot of teams in this tier. It's can we get a secondary receiver to emerge? For Washington, I think it will be Williams, but I do think Terry McLaurin will run away with the lead production in the offense. So I still feel pretty good about Terry.
Thank you. I feel a lot better.
That's what I'm here, Scott. I'm here to, you're here to make the Congress and the almost famous refs. I'm here to make you feel better about Terry McLaurin, because I have not seen Almost Famous. I'm sure you'll be shocked to know to find that I have not seen that movie.
Should put it on the long
list of things.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, my man.
I got Trey Harris routes to chart tonight. That's what my life looks like. All right, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking through more of the offensive fantasy power rankings. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We've got Scott Pianowski. We've got the fantasy offense power rankings. We're running through these teams here, the tiers. We're into tier three now. It looks pretty good on paper, but can they actually be good for fantasy football here? Number 20, Los Angeles Chargers. Number 19, Minnesota Vikings. 18, Jacksonville Jaguars. 17, Kansas City Chiefs. That's got to be the lowest the Chiefs have ever been in this exercise. I just got to say, that's got to be the lowest they've ever been. 16, Green Bay Packers. 15, Denver Broncos. 14, New York Giants. That's a big ranking on the Giants here, Scott. I'm surprised that the Chargers come in at 20 for you. Are you skeptical on McDaniel, or just kind of what's the state of the state for the Los Angeles Chargers here?
And it'll be fun just to see Justin Herbert have a healthy offensive line, because that collapsed right away last year. And then Hampton gets hurt, and Ladd McConkey had a down season. I'm certainly back in on McConkey, but I always think it's a team that they're going to be balanced play calling, run and pass. They'll have a decent defense. They'll be competitive. We know Jim Harbaugh wants to physically dominate the other team and kind of, you know, drag your other parts in the dirt and all that stuff. But I don't see as much upside for them as maybe some of these other teams. The thing with Minnesota, do you think it's a sure thing that Kyler Murray is the week one starter? Murray's saying all the right things. He gets out of Arizona. This just seems like a guy, bad relationship. Now he's going to a perfect relationship. O'Connell, I realize everything went wrong last year, and he, a lot of his mojo, a lot of his reputation suffered because maybe McCarthy couldn't play. But I blame more of that on McCarthy than I do O'Connell. O'Connell gets some blame, but I think that was more a McCarthy thing. And I've actually drafted Kyler Murray, who I thought I was out on Kyler Murray forever. I've actually drafted Kyler Murray proactively in a few places. I'm totally fine to take Justin Jefferson at cost, Jordan Addison at cost. Yeah. We know that. I think they're a good team. They were playing really well at the end of last season. A lot of that was Brian Flores and his defense, and they've kept Flores playing out of their minds. But I think this is a sleeping giant. This is a really good division, of course. I would not be at all surprised if Minnesota wins it. Kyler's the comeback player of the year. I'm talking myself into all this Viking stuff. Can you keep my, can you keep me grounded here, or do you think it's justified?
Number one, 100% lock that he's the week one starter, Kyler Murray, this season. I think the more interesting question is, he the Vikings week one starter in 2027? Play well enough? Does he play enough to get a big contract? Because that's the hope here, I think, for Minnesota, is that they want this to go well enough with Kyler as an off-ramp from the McCarthy experience, and that they give him a long-term contract at the end of the year, and he's their guy multiple years going forward. I think that's the question here for Kyler Murray, which obviously informs what we're going to do from a fantasy standpoint. I don't think that Murray is like the perfect fit in a Kevin O'Connell offense, because if you look, go back to like Sam Darnold's season, a lot of that was just pushing the ball over the deep and intermediate middle of the field, which that has been an issue for Kyler Murray. He doesn't consistently attack that area. He will turn down throws that are open over the intermediate and deep middle of the field, which is the Marvin Harrison Jr. problem from the first year and a half of his NFL experience. That being said, I think that Kevin O'Connell has shown many times that if you're a credible NFL quarterback, he can adjust to you. I think he will adjust the offense to fit a lot of what Kyler Murray wants to do. And I think he'll just be flat out way better than the quarterback play they got last year. Even in a system that did not fit Kyler Murray, he was still like 18th in the NFL since 2023 in EPA per play. Like, he's still been a top 20 quarterback. And I think a top 20 quarterback is good enough to get, really, to me, Scott, the two players I'm interested in drafting this year. It's really like one player. I'm just mostly interested in drafting Justin Jefferson. Addison's a fine player, but not a pro, to use one of your terms. He's like not like a green light player. He's like a yellow light player to me. Everybody else, like, I'm not that desperate to take in these other Vikings players. So to me, I think that's good enough.
Yeah, I like the way you phrased it, that I always say the best coaches, they work talent to scheme. They don't try to force their scheme into their talent, even when it doesn't fit. And you mentioned Kyler not making those over the middle throws. I always joke that he's not getting any taller, and he's as tall as he's ever going to be. So you have to make do with what his limitations are and scheme something around him. But Kevin O'Connell, perfect to do that. Like, some people are going to think the Jaguars are too low. I have them at 18. And I was interested to see, we know they obviously made the playoffs last year and Trevor Lawrence was a fantasy needle mover in the second half of the year. But so much of that was touchdown driven. And people go, well, so what? Yeah, the best players score touchdowns. What's the news on that? I wish the efficiency metrics were more in line with the breakout for the quote unquote breakout for Lawrence. I wish his stats validated him a little bit more. Now, you might say, well, look, Brian Thomas is never going to have the season he had last year. Everything went wrong for him. They got Jacoby Myers, who fit a need for them. That's a really nice piece. Washington became a good player. Liam Cohen looks like a right answer. So a lot of things going in the right direction here. I can't get past the idea that Trevor Lawrence is a good player, but never going to be a great player. He was a great fantasy player down the stretch last year. I think that was a little bit misleading. I also think this defense is going to be a really strong unit, and maybe they won't have to outscore teams like they did at times last year. So I think I thought I was going to be super gung-ho about the Jags, super gung-ho about Trevor Lawrence, and the stats gave me a little bit of cold water. What say you?
I think I'm actually more optimistic about Trevor Lawrence and the unit overall in Jacksonville trending the right way. Like, I do think Lawrence in the back half and Liam Cohen kind of found like a good wavelength. I don't think they were always on the same page at the beginning of the year, which is totally fine. You know, it's two guys like learning how to work together. And I thought that they just found a really good rhythm on offense between those two guys. I think the reason, though, I would probably, if doing this exercise, would still have them in this tier, if not just right at 18th where you had them, is that I don't know who's like the big winner if this offense is going to be good here. And Scott, I've been noodling on this take. I think the Jaguars are going to be the next Packers. And what I mean by that is that it is a collection of good receivers in the room, like Brian Thomas Jr. I don't think he will ever have the season that he had last year again. I also don't know if he's ever going to have the rookie season stats that he did ever again, especially because, like, yeah, I think Brian Thomas Jr. will be better this year. I think Parker Washington is good to some degree. I think Jacoby Myers is good to some degree. I think Travis Hunter is going to play wide receiver. Like, Liam Cohen just said this. I just quote tweeted this today. Liam Cohen, it was on the Jacksonville Jaguars Twitter page. Essentially, what he was talking about, like, what's the plan for Travis Hunter? He was asked this by the reporter. Unfortunately, I don't know her name. I apologize about that. But the long and short of it, the quote was, quote, the plan is to play him on both sides of the ball as much as possible. That has absolutely stayed the same. So this idea that he's not going to be playing wide receiver, he's going to be a full-time corner and not a wide, like, that's never been what the team has said. Like, he's still going to play wide receiver, and he should. He was really good when he was, like, he was really coming along right before he got hurt. So he's going to play. So, okay, that's four guys, plus the tight end that they drafted in the second round this year who's going to get snaps, plus Brenton Strange, who's a pretty good player. Like, is this not starting to sound like the Packers, and I want to talk about the Packers in the same tier, but this is not starting to sound like a big rotation of players where there's no true, like, it's a lot of good players, but there's not a true number one. That I kind of think is what the 2026 Jaguars receiving core is going to look like. So I'm probably more optimistic about the unit overall, maybe than you are, but I would probably still have them 18th because I'm not quite sure, like, maybe it's Spatial Tootin, but he's probably going to be in kind of an interesting split in the backfield as well. So I'm not really sure, like, who the fantasy winner is here, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Rodriguez, interesting sleeper in that backfield. I love that you comp them to the Packers in part because it gets me to trot out one of my favorite stats, which is since Devontae Adams left Green Bay, nobody has had more than 100 targets. Last year, the Green Bay target leader was 85. That's just life with Matt LaFleur, who's a good coach. by the way. I was laughing. Yeah. People, is Matt LaFleur in trouble? Get out of here. You know, there are 28 teams that would hire Matt LaFleur in a second if they could, or 24 teams or whatever it is. We know every year about what it seems like a quarter of the league turns over with their head coaching. So I guess maybe you talked me into moving up my Lawrence ranking, but it may be a team where the offense, all the guys kind of bump into each other. And I do think that fits the Packer motif as well. And I couldn't go too high with that. Look, I hope Tucker Kraft is healthy. We spent all last season talking up Tucker Kraft. You did it. Justin did it. I did it. And then he was validating it. And he was basically George Kittle 2.0.
Awesome.
And then he gets hurt. Yeah. He was the best tight end in football, I think, when he got hurt. And I'm still heartbroken over that. But major injury. Don't know how healthy he'll be. Jacobs has a lot of mileage. I think Love is a good player. I think Jordan Love's like a B to B plus quarterback. I don't think he's ever going to be an MVP. Maybe he'll be the first Packer quarterback that doesn't go to the Super Bowl after the run of guys they had before him. But, you know, the Packers are going to be good. I don't know that they can be great, and I don't think they'll have enough. The problem with their guys, even if they're going to produce, in most fantasy leagues, you manage it. You get to call the shot beforehand. You get to see the big game coming for Reed or Watson or, you know, some of these other receivers. Is Golden going to take a step forward in year two? Do we give him an excused absence last year? And they're all going to have their spike weeks. I just have no idea when they're going to come.
Well, I think that's interesting about the Packers receiver core is, while I think we settled this in Jacksonville, that I feel like they could have 480 to 100 target players this year. I mean, the math is going to be interesting to make work there. When it comes to the Packers, though, Scott, if you look at what they did this offseason and some of Matt LaFleur's comments, I think they could, for the first time in years, just have a pretty clear three-receiver set, you know, of Watson, Golden, and Reed, and how they're going to allocate snaps and routes. I don't know. Like, are they really rotating in Savion Williams and, like, Sky Moore, who is a returner last year? I doubt it. Wicks is gone. Dobbs is gone. LaFleur said, like, there was some drama in that room last year, which is no shock. When you have a room, there's not a lot of hierarchy and everybody's rotating in and out. Nobody's really happy with their role. And if that's the case, Scott, and this offense is still efficient, which is it going to be a top 10 unit, maybe top 12? Not sure. One of these guys, if not two of these guys, Watson, Reed, Golden, is going to be a big value this year in that case. And like, Watson went what, like, outside the top 30 receivers in our mock, I believe, or maybe right around receiver 30. That's a pretty good area for him to go. If he, obviously injury risk, but he was really awesome last year, and you know I'm a big fan of Jaden Reed.
And yet you have to mix in whatever Kraft gets, his targets.
Sure.
Musgrave will get some targets. I think LaFleur, I feel like they always play slow. They're always going to have a running element. I have trouble getting Jordan Love to 500 pass attempts. He hasn't done it the last 2 years, although he's missed a couple of games too. So I think Love's going to be one of these guys that you draft. Like, oh, he had a really good game. He was 23 for 29, you know, for 268 and two. Oh, what was he for the week? Quarterback 19. It's going to be a lot of that for Green Bay, I think.
I want to move out of this tier here and go to tier two, because I think there's some interesting teams. But before we do, just real quick, number one, everybody should be tracking the Bo Nix, like, ankle injury. There's just been some weirdness about that in terms of he had a revision surgery, just where he's at. Because otherwise, like, Jaylen Waddle was one of the guys I absolutely wanted to draft, like, super confidently and aggressively this year. Obviously, if there's any issues with Bo Nix, that would put a damper on that. But they're 15th in your rankings, and I think they make a lot of sense to be 15. A lot of good players there. But the one I do want to ask you to almost, like, justify a little bit, Giants at 14 seems really aggressive to me. Talk me through your thought process on Giants at 14.
Well, I think they might have three automatic starters in Dart, in Neighbors, and in Scadaboo, and I realize they're all dealing with things. I mean, Neighbors and Darvish didn't play it all together last year. They're getting to know each other. Yeah. Hi, I'm Jackson. Hi, I'm Malik. How you doing? Nice to meet you. Throw me the ball 160 times. Thank you.
But Malik Neighbors was posting, like, Instagram memes of Jackson Dart. So, like, you know, I'm sure they're boys. But my question to Scott is, like, how healthy is Malik Neighbors? And, like, is he playing week one? And if he's not playing week one, like, when is he going to be 100%? Like, that would be my question here with him.
And can Jackson Dart play the reckless style that he played last year? He's in the concussion tent a bunch of times, and it's a tricky thing because he needs that running element to justify his ADP or to justify being an every week starter. But if he plays like that, it's hard to imagine him holding up and playing a full schedule. Does somebody emerge as a second reliable target? What does Isaiah Likely do, finally allowed to be a starter after kind of having to share time constantly? I'm surprised Baltimore didn't try to keep him and they extended Mark Andrews instead, but that's the route they went. Jim Harbaugh was happy to get Likely over to the Meadowlands. But end of the day, it comes down to your view on the Giants. And I realize injury projections and all that can be a little bit of a fool's errand. But to have them this lofty, you have to tell yourself a story that Neighbors is playing week one, that Dart has figured out how to slide or how to run out of bounds, that Scadaboo can hold up for 13, 14, 15 games, which I think we would take from any major running back. So this is a ranking that could look really bad because I probably have them at their ceiling. And if one of these things falls apart, then they're probably going to be in the 20s. But I guess I saw three players that people are going to be excited to draft and that ultimately carry them to the top of this tier.
Yeah, I don't hate any of the analysis there, and I agree with you that if all these guys hit, like it's three starters. Dart would be a QB1. Scadaboo is a big offseason winner after there was some talk that maybe they could look to replace him or add competition in the room. He essentially was the workhorse in this exact same depth chart last year. I think there's a good shot he can be here. He was another pick that I really liked in the mock draft. Jason Klobaka, our boss, I believe took Watson and Cam Scadaboo, and I like both those picks. So Jason, locked in. You love to see that. And they even got like a collection of interesting role players too. I liked Malachi Fields as a round three pick. Isaiah Likely added here. Theo Johnson. They could run a lot of 12 personnel, if not 13 personnel, because they brought in Chris Manhurts, like big ass blocking tight end. Darnell Mooney. And the offensive line, I think, is going to be good. So I guess the more I'm talking about it, I'm like, maybe I do like the Giants at 14. I just think they are a volatile kind of ranking, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Jackson Dart is definitely their spirit animal. I mean, most teams are defined by their quarterback, but Jackson Dart's highs and lows are going to totally fit into the theme of the 2026 Giants.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. We come back. We're jumping from tier three to tier two. We're finally getting to those top 13, top 12-ish offenses in the NFL. We will get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it is time to unveil the top two tiers here in Scott Pianowski's fantasy offense power rankings. Let's jump into tier two first. Offenses, we need to be good. We need these guys to be good in fantasy, but there are some questions throughout this tier. Number 13, Seattle Seahawks. Number 12, the Atlanta Falcons. Number 11, Cincinnati Bengals. Number 10, New England Patriots. Number 9, Baltimore Ravens. Number 8, the Indianapolis Colts. Okay, Scott, usually I throw to you here. I'm going to just say number 12, Atlanta Falcons. That feels spicy to me. I realize they have Bijan Robinson. I realize they have Drake London. That's awesome. How much certainty do you feel about anything else on this offense other than London and Robinson?
It ultimately came down to how low could I rank a team who have the consensus number one player in Robinson and a no-brainer second-round player in Drake London. And an intriguing – I don't know who Kyle Pitts is. I know he had a good rookie year, although he didn't score touchdowns. I know he basically disappointed us for the next 15 years or so, it felt. And then last year he's in the middle of a – I'm on your waiver wire, I'm on your bench, and then he goes ballistic for about 6 weeks. So now we're kind of in limbo again. Like so many teams – Matt, I was surprised when I went through this and I was doing my rankings – usually quarterback is like the easiest position to understand as far as where teams are at. And there were so many quarterbacks last year that got hurt, that played poorly, that I feel like there's less stability. Like, we didn't even mention the Chiefs in the previous segment. I don't know when Patrick Mahomes is going to play. I don't know what version of Patrick Mahomes we're going to get. Jaden Daniels had a year wiped out by injury. A lot of teams, Josh Allen couldn't find a receiver he liked. So he had a weird year. Kyler Murray played his way out of a job in Arizona. Geno Smith was terrible with the Raiders. Daniel Jones is in this tier. He's coming back from a major injury, and his health and efficiency has a big say in what the Colts are. They were steamrolling to a division championship and didn't even make the playoffs after Jones got hurt. Joe Burrow, he's in this tier. The Bengals can be a playoff team. They've been a Super Bowl team with Burrow, and when he's hurt, basically the season gets unplugged. Lamar Jackson just had the worst season he's probably ever going to have. So there's a lot I realize the Falcons have, we don't know if Penix can play. We don't know if Tua can play. We don't know if Tua can stay healthy. At least they have two left-handed quarterbacks. That's nice. But it's easy to say, well, I'm not going near this Falcons offense because I don't trust those quarterbacks. Well, Bijan was great last year with the same basic setup. And London was still, when he was healthy, it was still the Drake London, I think, that we expected. And him and Penix had some nice moments the previous year out the door. And at least, look, we're talking about elite talents, and we're talking about tight concentration. This offense is going to be about three guys, star running back, a star receiver, and what I think is capable of being a plus receiving tight end. There's nobody else. Algier's gone. Robinson will spot some carries to other guys, but he's basically going to be the workhorse we want. I have no problem smashing him immediately in round one. London is still a second round pick to me. I know some people might say, no, with his quarterbacks, his injuries, the touchdown equity, maybe not what we like. Maybe he's a third round pick to people. Still happy to take him in the second round. Pitts is more of a fork in the road guy for me, although tight end isn't all that much fun this year. But bottom line, look, you know, Bijan did it last year. Concentrated offense, dome team, a team I think will be in some shootouts. I'm fine with the Falcons at 12. I get with that, the top two guys that they have, how much lower can you really rank them?
Now, that's a good point. And concentration is definitely on their side, as much as, you know, there's a small part of me that is rooting for the Jahan Dotson revival. But it's like, don't laugh at me, Scott, please. Have like a nice season.
Don't root with your draft picks. You can root on the side. You're watching tape. No. Don't root with your roster spots. Yeah.
Yes, of course. For the most part. Anyways, okay. There's a lot of volatility, though, in this tier, to your point, when you were kind of rattling it off. And I think no team exemplifies volatility more than the Indianapolis Colts at 8 here. Obviously, they have Jonathan Taylor. Boone made a great case for Jonathan Taylor to be a first-round fantasy pick on our show earlier this week. What do you think about the passing game, though, with Daniel Jones? Like, can they run as pure as they did in the first 8 weeks of last season? Can Josh Downs take a step forward? Can Tyler Warren take a step forward? Like, is Alec Pierce able to handle more volume? Because they paid him to handle more volume, but is the skill set there for him to do that? So I think the Colts are a really interesting team that if everything breaks right, like, we know the proof of concept is they can be one of the best offenses in the NFL. Do you think everything is breaking right this year for them?
It just comes down to Jones's health. And Justin Boone is absolutely correct that Jonathan Taylor is a first-round pick. I had the 11th pick in that index draft, and I basically ran to the podium to take Jonathan Taylor. I was thrilled that he got to me. I would have no problem taking him earlier in the first round as well. He's a staple guy. Remember, until Jones got hurt, Jonathan Taylor was like the cheat code of fantasy football, and it all fell apart when they didn't have the quarterback play. So if you can tell yourself a story that Jones is playing week one – and he's healthy, just look at the talent here. You didn't mention Ty Warren, who's a very good tight end. Steichen is a play caller we like. They have receivers who really complement each other well. Thrilled that they kept Pierce. Downs is a good player. I still think Taylor could catch 40 to 50 passes, although maybe they won't go that route. Hopefully Jones can still maintain some of his athleticism. Before he got hurt, this was a top five offense. This is one of those, it's Monday, I got to cleanse my palate. Maybe the Sunday night game wasn't good. What's an offense I can watch that I'll enjoy? That'll be fun. I'd fire up the Colts as one of my early watches because I just wanted to feel good. So,
yeah.
Again, healthy. If the quarterback is healthy, you're going to like these guys. I also want to mention really quickly, I'm sure some people are listening saying, the Seahawks, 13th, they won the Super Bowl. They just dominated everybody. You know, they won. They outlasted the Rams in the NFC West. They made the Patriots look terrible on Super Bowl Sunday. It's all true. But it's about the defense. There isn't that much draftable here. JSN's a star. Sam Darnold, even in the Super Bowl season, was basically like a high-end fantasy backup. The backfield will be multi-headed, and there's some questions about when Charbonnet comes back. Did they take Price too early? I don't know that Shaheed or Kupp are going to be useful. I mean, A.J. Barnum will score 5 or 6 touchdowns. Good luck predicting when any of those happen. I even think there could be a case that the Seahawks are a tier too high. Well, what say you?
No, I think from a fantasy standpoint, that makes sense because I don't know that they're going to ever have like they're never going to have a reason, especially because their defense still looks great. Like they should be in a lot of those game scripts. They're not going to have a lot of incentive to open it up for like a Rashid Shaheed to be a starter. I think Cooper Kupp is a complimentary player. at this point, I like Torrey Horton, but again, is he going to have volume to be a fantasy factor? Probably not. Like, it'll be JSN, it'll be Jadarian Price as like a, I think probably a boomer bust running back two type, and really that's it. So yeah, I think from a fantasy standpoint, it makes sense. They could even, yeah, be a tier down, even though I do think they'll still be a really efficient offense and still be a very good team. Real quick, just doubling back to the Colts, the good part about them, if you're making this bet on them being the eighth best fantasy offense, is you really don't, other than Jonathan Taylor, who you have to, you know, take really high, the rest of these guys are not going high. Like in best ball drafts right now, Tyler Warren, 59th in terms of overall ADP. Alec Pierce, 75th. Josh Downs, 120th. Like, you don't have to pay an iron price for these guys to get them on your rosters.
I love that. They're all ADP targets at those prices. And just one other thing to unpack with the Seahawks, and we have to mention, you know, losing Kubiak as OC is going to hurt.
Yep.
Do you ever draft vanity defenses? Seahawks look fantastic. The Texans look amazing. I'm never going to be that guy. But are you the guy who drafts the Seahawks? Are you the guy who drafts the number one, number two, number three defense? Or you just kind of let that position come to you?
No, it'll never be me. It'll never be me. I'll just hope to be like, I'll hope to get the next Seahawks. You know what I'm saying?
Me
like
too.
That's really kind of where I would hope to find it there. I do want to talk Patriots and Ravens, but we're running out of some time here. So we'll come back to those teams. We'll come back to the damn Patriots when they if they trade for AJ Brown at some point. Part of me wonders if it's an if, but I'll unpack that at a different time. Anyways, let's get to the first tier here. Let's talk about some of these really exciting offenses. Starting with 7, Chicago Bears, 6, Philadelphia Eagles, 5, Buffalo Bills, 4th, Los Angeles Rams, 3, San Francisco 49ers, 2, Dallas Cowboys, and number 1, Scott, where your heart is, the Detroit Lions, number 1 here. Okay. Here's how I want to phrase this, because these are all great offenses. I think we're all drafting and we're investing in these players. The tier title here is invest in these elite offensive ecosystems. Yes, sir, Colin, we will invest in these offensive ecosystems. But is there one that you look at and think like, actually, this one makes me a little bit nervous? Like, which team here of the 7 is the volatile one?
Oh, there is one. It's Buffalo. Because I don't know if their receiver room can be trusted. I don't know if Kincaid can play a full season. Josh Allen's great. James Cook is great. Can they justify this type of real estate in my rankings with two players you can trust? It comes down to what DJ Moore can do, or if they get a full season out of Kincaid. And even Kincaid, he's a limited tight end. They're going to use a lot of Dawson Knox and just to kind of get in our fantasy way. So at Buffalo, I toyed with having them lower. I mean, you could easily tell me a story where the Patriots replace the Bills in this tier, the Ravens replace the Bills in this tier, the Colts, if Joe Burrow's healthy, the Bengals, we didn't talk about them, but it's really simple. If Burrow's healthy, they're great. If Burrow isn't healthy, you cry in your beer. You know, with you, it's probably some craft beer I've never heard of. You know, you're drinking beer is kind of like the movies I watch. You know, we just don't have a lot of intersection there. I still love you though, buddy.
I don't drink beer that much anymore, Scott. Now it's like, you know, bottles of wine. I'm afraid to admit how pricey they are.
Right. Well, yeah, we had to actually tape this a little bit later today because you had to finish your yogurt. You know, that's the health kick that you get with Matt Harmon. That's partially true. There's a kernel of truth in there. It's all about the granola with Matt Harmon.
It's not 0% true, but it's not 100% true what Scott has said here. Let's just say it like
if
that.
By the way, if I didn't say Buffalo for the answer to that, I know there's a lot of kind of uncertainty with the Eagles. AJ Brown's going to leave. They obviously drafted and handled free agency like that. But Jalen Hurts is going to have to show us what – and he's running less. And he didn't have as many rushing touchdowns this year. He didn't scramble as proactively. Barkley's still a great player, but maybe not an elite player. Jalen Hurts, you have good receivers. You have guys who complement each other and threaten the field well together, at least on paper. A lot of it needs to be proven because there's been so many new additions. But we need to see Jalen Hurts prove he can be a plus quarterback from the pocket, which he hasn't always been to this point in his career.
Yeah, I think when we're looking at this tier two, I think it's a lot about, you know, concentration. I do think once AJ Brown is removed, I think the targets will be really consolidated in Philly. Like guys like Dontavian Wicks and Dallas Goedert are going to play roles, but for the most part, it's going to be Devontae Smith runner. I can't wait to draft Devontae Smith this year. I think Mekhi Lemon's going to hold a pretty big role. The Bears are another team that I think last year they just got too many guys. It's going to be really wide open. I mean, this is a team right now that like I look at the way this is constructed. Colson Loveland, Roma Dunze, Luther Burden, like they're going to dominate the passing targets there. And like Khalif Raymond, Cole Kmet, Xavier Thomas, like some of these other guys, they're role players in this offense. I think that is really good news from a fantasy standpoint if you're interested in this in this Bears offense, which I am.
So let me ask you this. I talk about helium players, right? Loveland, the way he played at the end of last year, he just looks like a monster. I can still see him scoring that game-winning touchdown against the Bengals, and he was just as good the rest of the season. Burden showed flashes of being a special player. Adunze started really well, and I think he gets an injury excuse for the second half of the year. But people believe in Ben Johnson. I think people are willing to believe in Caleb Williams, even if it's the puppeteer Johnson, a big part of that. So people are going to aggressively draft Loveland, aggressively draft Burden. I think some people will aggressively draft Adunze as well. So you're going to have to elbow people out of the way. You have to go the extra buck in your salary cap league or maybe jump, you know, around in value to pick some of these guys. Are you willing to do it? Are these helium picks that you can get behind? Do you think you're going to be priced out?
No, I'll be in. I took Colson Loveland in the third round of our mock draft, which might have been too aggressive. Right. But I was aggressive on Colson Loveland. I want to be aggressive, and I think that with both these Bears receivers, I think ADP may have too big of a gap. I'm confident that ADP is going to have too big of a gap between Burden and Adunze, because I think both these guys are guys I want to draft. But it essentially will be like, oh, you take one, I'm taking the other. You know, that's kind of because I think they'll project very, very similarly. I really buy that those guys will be kind of like maybe co number ones in this wide receiver room. I just think it's an offense I want to be invested in, you know, and I want to invest in all these players at cost.
They are going to be, we haven't seen the schedule yet. They're going to get like 27 primetime games, right?
Oh yeah. So get ready. If you draft these guys like and you pick the wrong one, if there is a wrong one, which I don't know that there is, but if there is a wrong one, get ready to feel the pain on that one. There's never any pain, Scott, hope, when I bring I just, you on the show and we talk
not,
fantasy.
I just hope they're not Washington. They're not, you know, the Commanders from last year, because what a nightmare that was.
Well, yeah. Let's hope we're not seeing a lot of backup quarterbacks and injuries. Let's fingers crossed on that one. Scott, this is a great show. Really appreciate it. We didn't talk about every single team because guess what, folks? We are reading again in 2026. So what you're going to do is you're going to go to the website and you're going to read Scott's article for more analysis you didn't get on the show. But Scott, appreciate the hell out of you for joining me on the show. What else are you working on? Baseball, fantasy football, fantasy, I don't know, badminton. What else are we working on right now?
Yeah, it's baseball and football all the time. Remember, the fantasy football game is open for business. You can draft a team, and you can also draft another fantasy baseball team. That's still up. So, you know, you got too many guys hurt. You just lost Tariq Skubal, which I wrote about this week. No big deal. Draft another team. You know, if one thing isn't working out, you just go to plan B. Something else is always something better.
There's always something else for you here if you're playing Yahoo Fantasy, which you should be. In the meantime, that is going to do it for this show. Joel Smith joins me on Tuesday when we come back to identify the ADPs we have serious questions about right now, both good and bad. That's going to be live right here, 2 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday on this YouTube channel. So make sure you subscribe here or wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, we are out.